tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground, where this is the place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. Good day, everyone. And today, we're going to have another great episode of The Common Ground. Okay, but before I actually get into my topics, there's a couple of things that I really want to discuss before I actually talk about my topic. This just has been weighing in on my mind, and I do believe this is a topic that's very important to me, and you know what I mean? I think it needs to be talked about. Okay, so there's something tragically happened, right? Kelsey Farragon, a 9-year-old girl from a Spanish town, St. Catherine, Jamaica, was found dead inside a barrel at her home on May 9th, 2025. Her body was discovered by her 16-year-old brother while her mother was running errands. Authorities suspect sexual assault prior to the murder. The main suspect, Giovanni Ellis, also known as Cooler Man, was out on bail for a prior sexual offense at that time. So after all of that happened, after a nationwide manhunt, Ellis was shot and killed by police on May 12th. During an attempt arrest. Community members expressed grief and outrage, calling for better child protection laws and accountability for repeat offenders. Now, well, I'm going to tell you something, right? I went to Jamaica back in August of last year. And ever since I went to Jamaica and I came back from Jamaica, for some reason, you know, when I scrolled to like Instagram or TikTok or whatever, I started seeing a lot of Jamaicans posting different stuff, posting like a lot of funny things, good content, which I do be enjoying. But when I see this story came across my timeline, you know, it just bothered me, man. How can someone be so sick and evil to assault and murder a young child, a young innocent kid? You know, these are the type of stories that we need to highlight and talk about. We need to discuss these things whenever it's happening. Okay, so there's another tragic incident. Ronnie Smith, also known as G-Money, Lil Ronnie, he was murdered on March 3rd, 2025, at Slappy's Express Car Wash in Forest Hill, Texas. Smith and his 5-year-old daughter, Armani, man, that's such a beautiful name. Armani were killed in a targeted shooting. The suspects were two men. One has been identified, but names have not been released. Capital murder warrants have been issued. The community is in shock, calling for justice and questioning the rise of violence. Authorities urge anyone with information to come forward, right? So, we have a sad incident regarding a child that happened in Jamaica. We had a sad incident happened to a child right here in the United States. And what really bothers me is that, especially when it comes to black children, right? When it comes to kids, a lot of times the mainstream media, they're not talking about these type of things. That's why I'm here when I say stuff like that. And as long as I have this platform, I will be talking about these type of things because we need to highlight these, man. We need to get these type of people off the streets, these murderers, these killers, these people that have no regard for life. They do not need to be walking on our streets at all. I don't care. You know what I mean? Assaulting a little young girl, murdering people on the streets. People, what are we doing as a community, huh? Where are the outrage? We need to have, when we hear these type of stories, we need to have outrage within our community. Don't try to get in your community right now. Don't you start getting tired of the violence that's going on with young kids, or they're murdering each other, and then other young children who are innocent is getting caught in the crossfire? We need to do better as a society, especially as a black society. So some call action right there I thought about, right? So we often see community outrage when police officer kills an unarmed black man. A lot of times we see the community outrage. But of course, they're rightfully so. But why don't we see the same energy when it comes to black-on-black violence? Huh? Why don't we see the same energy when another black man is killing another black man? When it's time to really protest is when we see these type of things a lot more. We need to protest in our damn neighborhood. Right? You know, we have all the higher people, black people, that's in certain positions. And of course, when a black person or when a police officer kills a black person, what they do? They're quick to go on the news and quick to talk about it, right? But when another black man kills another black person, they're quiet. Why? Why are they quiet? I believe they all should have the same energy. So let's discuss the idea of snitching, right? The notion that reporting a crime makes you a traitor to your community has to change. It has to change, man. We need to stop protecting criminals just because they live next door. Snitching should be seen as protecting your community. When you snitch on that person, tell on the person, that means you're trying to get a person off the streets and you're protecting your daggone community. I need y'all to stop saying, I ain't no snitch. Be a damn snitch. So then what? I know you said it's easier said than done. You know, because the person might murder me, right? But at the same time, though, the same person might murder other people out there as well. We have to start looking out for our damn community, man. We need to. We need to start looking out for the community. We need to organize neighborhood watches. We need to have better community outreach programs for the youth, for the young children, and more support. And more support for victims and families, right? You know what I mean? We need to have all that stuff. Because sometimes you hear about these young black moms, right? These black mothers who are losing their children in these neighborhoods before they even turn 18, right? Losing these kids in their neighborhood before they even turn 18 years old. We need to encourage listeners, right? We need to encourage people to challenge the narrative and take a stand against violence, regardless of who the perpetrator is. So we need to, all of us, encourage everyone to stand up against violence. Violence shouldn't be nowhere in our damn neighborhood at all. It really makes me sad when I see that. Even like with my young son, 9 years old, I live in a pretty safe neighborhood, decent neighborhood. But right, to be honest with you, right down the street from my damn neighborhood is a damn hood. I'm not lying to you about that. And sometimes, When my son asked me to go outside, I let him go outside sometimes. But at the same time, though, it just makes me nervous. You never know what's going to happen outside, you're outside of your doors. Just like some years ago, this young 15-year-old girl was just playing at the park. There was a drive-by in Chicago. And she got murdered in the crossfire. She got caught in the crossfire. Also, this young off-duty police officer, I can't remember her name right now, but this happened in Chicago as well, where these two guys were robbing this lady and they murdered her. The police officer was like 22 years old, just murdered her for no reason. My cousin, I'm going to say her name, Jada Moore, from Maryland, 16 years old, got murdered by a guy not too older than she was. People, these young men, a lot of these young men out there, they cannot control their emotions. And it's us, as OGs, I would say, the older generation, we need to start teaching these young people, right? And we need to start making them accountable. When these type of things happen, we need to start organize a thing within our neighborhood, within our neighborhoods. We need to start. Because I know that you want to have for your children to go outside and play safely. I know that you want your kids to go to school without incident. I understand. I know that. And that's why we as a community, as a whole, we need to do better. We don't need those type of people within our neighborhood at all. We do not. So now, right? So let's talk about challenging the no snitching mentality. The no snitching culture perpetrates violence and allows criminals to continue harming the community. Think about it, right? When you say, "Oh, I'm no snitch. I'm not a snitch." Forget that. You know what I'm saying? Let the police do their job. But yet the same people is going to be killing the next person. Reporting a crime isn't a betrayal. It's an act of protecting loved ones and neighbors. Holding criminals accountable strengthens rather than weakens the community. Think about it, right? When you hold these criminals accountable and get these people off the streets, things like that will strengthen the community. It will. It will strengthen the community and make the community at least a little bit better as a whole. Right? So we need to emphasize the importance of community involvement in crime prevention, right? Emphasize that. We need to emphasize that a whole lot more. The community involvement in crime prevention. We need to start creating a safe, anonymous channels for reporting crime without fear of retaliation. Safe. You understand me? You know what I mean? We need to collaborate with local law enforcement to build trust and ensure safety for those who come forward, right? We need to start. I know sometimes, especially as Black people, we're like, "No, I don't trust a police officer, man. I don't like their police officer." I'm also seeing things that happen on the news with the police officers, right? I'm seeing that. I get it. I'm with you. I understand all of that. But I do believe, though, we need to start getting all of that mentality because, yeah, you might see certain things on the news when it comes to police officer killing unarmed Black men. So it does happen, right? But we need to get out of the fear. We need to stop thinking about the micro and start thinking about the macro. Stop thinking about the micro and start thinking about the macro. Because when let's say you get with the police officers and you talk to them, try to build some kind of rapport with them. You know what I mean? Build some kind of rapport with them. So if something happened, guess what? You can call them up, whatever. Have like a community leader to do the talking. Who doesn't mind to do the talking? That's how things get happen. That's how things will get better within our neighborhood. Because we need to make our neighborhood safe. We don't need those criminals on the streets. We don't need those criminals on the streets. You know what I mean? Those criminals need to be off the streets. Now, so let's acknowledge the fear, right, of retaliation. Keeps people silent, but silent enables violence to thrive, right? So we need to start acknowledging the fear of retaliation, right? Yeah, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. But things, you know what I mean? But if I get this criminal off the street, guess what? If we get the criminal off the streets, then guess what? Our neighborhood will be just a little bit safer right now. There's nothing wrong with hosting community meetings to discuss safety strategies and support system for victims, right? Because a lot of y'all in your neighborhoods, a lot of y'all know people, and y'all are close. Y'all are close, right? So there's nothing wrong with having like a dinner at home at your house sometimes and talk about what's going on, you know what I mean, in the neighborhood. And talk about what's going on within your neighborhood. So we need to start ensuring victims, the families receive the support they need without stigma, right? Help out the victim family. We need to mobilize community resources to provide counseling, legal aid, and advocacy to affected families. Highlight the long-term consequences of staying silent, including the risk to future victims. We need to highlight the long-term consequences. Talk about those situations. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with that, to highlighting it and talk about it to ensure, you know what I'm saying, things that happen in the community. We reach it and talk about it and discuss the situation. So let's start addressing the root cause, right? Addressing the root causes. We need to discuss the systematic issues contributing to violence, such as poverty, lack of education, and limited opportunities, right? That's that type of stuff where as we as Black people, you know what I mean? We still live in America. We are, a lot of us are citizens of this country, and we have every right. So there's nothing wrong with going over there and talk to them politicians, see what's going on, right? Why is it them, the rich white school out there is getting more funding than the school right here in the ghetto, in the hood, who will need the most funding? Why is that? So we need to advocate for mentorship programs as well that keep youth engaged and away from crime. That's why we need to have a lot more mentorship program. So we also need to support the local businesses, right? And create job creations as a means to reduce economic driven crime. Think about it, right? Imagine we start having more Black businesses within the neighborhood. And we could create a lot more jobs for the young kids, the young teenagers, you know? Just like me, I'll be honest with you. My teenage years wasn't perfect, but guess what though, what helped me a lot? Working at Burger King, working at McDonald's, for the most part, kept me off the streets a lot. Because I had a job at 16 years old. I started working at the age of 14. I had a job. You know what I mean? And a lot of that kept me off the streets. And that's what we need. We need to start creating more things to try to keep these youth off the streets. You know, one thing missing, I do believe, is a lot of these boys and girls clubs that used to happen within the neighborhood. We need to bring that back within the neighborhood. And the government is not going to fund it because they don't care about you in the hood. That's why you should organize and do things for yourself, because the government is not going to do it for you. They're not. We just need to, as a community, do it with each other. So building positive narrative too, right? Let's share success stories of communities that broke silence and reduced violence, right? Like, for example, in my neighborhood, there was like this one girl right here, not too where I live at. She won $15 million in scholarship, a Black girl, last year, last school year, when she graduated high school. $15 million to go to any college in America she wants to go to. Wow. Scholarship. Wow. That's a great success story right there. A young Black girl coming out of the hood. You know what I mean? And her future is very bright. A lot of times we also use social media to spotlight community heroes too. If you know somebody is doing good within your neighborhood, why not spotlight them? Why not talk about them on your timeline? Spotlight those people. You know what I mean? Trust me. Let's stand up against crime, man. Let's do that. Let's normalize the idea of protecting your community means holding each other accountable. I love this one. Normalize the idea that protecting your community and holding people accountable for their actions, right? We need to stop talking about, I'm not a snitch. Be the daggone snitch. If you know somebody's doing a serious crime out there, forget all that. We need to get those type of people off the streets. We do. Because look, I'm right now, me, I get fed up of that. Just like I said earlier, the same energy you as a Black person out there, say this cop killing an unarmed Black man, right? You have the same dagger energy with another Black man killing other Black people. You need to have the same dagger energy. And you know, at first I wasn't going to talk about this, but I think I need to talk about this for a second. The group Black Lives Matter, right? What do that really mean? Huh? Tell me, explain. Because when these black people are killing each other out there, I don't see them out there. I don't. That's crazy to me. Yeah, you're going to come out if there's an injustice when a white man do it against a black man. But how about black man when there's an injustice against a black man doing it to against another black man or woman or whatever? Huh? Black lives matter, right? Let's get it right, people. We need to have same dagger outrage, man. You cannot have, as Chris Rock could say, selective outrage. If you're going to be outraged with one dagger thing, outrage, be outraged with another thing. Be fear across the border. All right, I know I spent quite a time on this topic right here. But I'm going to talk about a few things, a few more topics. Okay, so before I actually dive in, right, I want to give a big shout out to Instagram's own @just_amazingly. I'm going to say it again, @just_amazingly. Her powerful storytelling and historical content highlighting unsung black heroes and stories deeply inspired today's episode. If you haven't followed her, please do so. Please do so. Because I'm not lying to you. Like when she's telling these stories, it's only like maybe 2 minutes. If time to tell a story or less than that. But I'm telling you, man, I'm like, damn, I want to hear more. You know what I mean? So I wish somebody could give her a show. You know what I mean? A show on a podcast or something which I could talk about these type of stories. Because me personally, I love to learn different topics, right? So let's talk about the first topic, the Wilmington Massacre of 1898. Imagine a thriving black community in Wilmington, North Carolina. Just 30 years after slavery ended, black people were running businesses, getting elected, and making real progress. It was a symbol of what America could be after Reconstruction. But not everyone wanted to see that kind of progress. Not everybody. You know they're going to have haters, man. You know what I mean? The black people trying to strive, just minding their damn business, as they always do. But a lot of times, these white racist people come into these damn neighborhood because they hate to see black people strive and do good. You know what I mean? We need to be left alone. Let us strive and do good, right? So, in 1898, a racist campaign began brewing. The local Democratic Party, angry about black political influence, started pushing fear and propaganda, just like today, into their news. Newspaper like the News and Observer published inflammatory stories. Then came Alex Manly, a bold black editor who published a piece challenging white assumption about black men. The article lit a fuse, right? Think about it, right? This brave black editor, he didn't care about the consequences, right? Yeah, he already knew when he was writing stuff to debunk what the white people were saying back then in the news. They didn't like that crap. They didn't like it. So guess what they did? On November 10th, angry white mobs, men armed and led by a former Confederate Alfred Wardell, burned down Manly's newspaper, the Daily Record. Then they swept through black neighborhoods, killing dozens, maybe even hundreds. They marched right into the city, forced elected officials now to resign. Think about it. Then people got a gun point, got you by a gun point. I said, you better quit right now. I'm going to blow your damn brains out, right? You better quit. I ain't playing with you. And then guess what? And Wardell, right, himself, right, he saw himself as a damn mayor. This was an actual coup back then. This was the only coup in American history. The only coup. And the reason why I say the only coup in American history? Because January 6th, yeah. They tried to January 6, 2021. They tried to overthrow the government, but they didn't do it. So it was an attempted coup of January 6th. okay? But this one was an actual coup on a black city. These black people were just minding their daggone business. And these racist white people out there want to disrupt their lives, and they did. They disrupt their lives in a negative and bad way. This wasn't just a riot. It was a violent political takeover designed to strip power from black citizens, right? Because they hated to see black people in power. They hate it. And I'm going to go on the record and say this right now. When Kamala Harris was running for president, I believe it that they hated that they didn't want a black woman to be president, right? They talk about the damn economy was bad. It wasn't the damn daggone economy. I don't believe that nonsense. It was because they didn't want a black woman to be president, point blank. Let's be real, America. Let's talk about this. Let's have a conversation. Let's be real. Okay, so afterwards, laws were changed to suppress the black vote. Think about it, right? Laws were changed. This was in 1898 to suppress the black vote. And then the Jim Crow era began. Ooh, the Jim Crow era lasted almost 80 years. That's why we have to talk about it, right? So it never happened again. If you notice, right, that some of these states, they've been trying to ban books. You know why? It's not to keep black people ignorant. It's not. Because we black people, anyway, especially a lot of us, we're going to talk to our kids any damn way, right? They can suppress a lot, but they can't suppress our mind. Is to keep their children ignorant to the fact. That's it. That's the reason why they want to ban these books. These books with all these great information, right? They keep there because they know. And I'm a really firm believer in this. They know if their kids really know the whole truth about what this country was like back in that day, these young white children will probably hate their damn ancestors out there. That's what I believe. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the young white kids, you know, see a lot of them hanging with black people. And they could ban books all day long. It's not going to stop them. A lot of the young white kids today are very smarter. To me, they're smarter than their damn parents. Trust me. So they can ban books all day long. It's still not going to keep us ignorant. And one thing I would say, though, about that, right? They want to keep the people blind because they want history to go back to what it was once was. A lot of them do. A lot of them do. And it's so sad when you hear your own black people talking about that. They're like this black guy that in South Carolina that was running for governor. Talking about slavery and all that crap. That we should go back to slavery. A black person talking like that. That's a damn shame to me. Okay. So the next topic, right? Isaac Woodard. No, Isaac Woodard, he was a veteran who came home. This guy came home to violence. Picture this. You've just returned from World War II. You've worn the uniform, fought for your country, and just a few hours after being discharged, you're beaten blind by a white police chief. That's what happened to Isaac Woodard. Yes, in February of 1946, Isaac, still in uniform, was on the bus in South Carolina. He asked to use the bathroom. The bus driver didn't like that. Dang. Think about it. The bus driver didn't like him asking to use the bathroom. So he stopped the bus and called the police. Then Chief Linwood Shaw beat Woodard so badly with a nightstick that he lost both eyes. Think about it, right? So I really wonder, though, man, after that incident, man, I really wonder how the daggone bus driver felt after that. That the black man was going to get his butt kicked like that to be blinded. Huh? I really wonder how he felt. Did he even feel bad? Damn. I should have let the man go to the daggone bathroom. All this would never have happened. Think about it. This man served his country. The same country that enslaved his family. His damn ancestors, right? He fought for this dagger country because he loved America. He knows that America could be better, right? That's why he fought for this country. And he came home, right? He dodged bullets over there, wherever he was, right? During World War II. You know what I mean? Wherever he was, right? He dodged bullets. And he came home to his own country to have been attacked by this racist police officer back then. Just because the man wanted to use the dagger bathroom, wanted to use the restroom. To me, it's just sad, you know? And these are the type of stories that we need to know. Because I'm telling you, if you don't know these stories, history will repeat itself. That's why these people are trying to ban books, okay? So when the NAACP and the radio host, Orson Welles, told Isaac's story, it shocked the nation. President Truman himself got involved. Though Shaw was never convicted, thanks to an all-white jury, Woods' case led Truman to create the Civil Rights Commission and eventually desegregate the military. So think about this, right? Back then, the military was very segregated. And it took a tragic accident for the president of the United States to, you know what, we need to desegregate the dagger military, right? I guess back then, President Truman probably saw the bigger picture. Just like what happened to Emmett Till about 9 years later in 1955, what happened to him? And that's when that sparked the civil rights movement after that. You know what I mean? So, suffering wasn't in vain. His pain pushed America forward. He died in 1992, but his story reminds us how deep injustice runs and how it can lead to real change if people speak up. And today, it's even better. We have the internet, right? Keep recording. Keep putting your damn cameras out there. When you see injustice, keep recording this stuff. Recording it and put it out there. Because these are injustice, we need to hone it, and we need to talk about these type of things. We need to talk about these injustices that happen to people, right? Doesn't matter if it's your own black people, put them on blast. Because there's no way, you know what I mean, a lot of these people don't get justice for what happened. You know what I mean? Just like recently, this young rapper, right? Oh, a couple years ago, maybe it was like 2020, or 21, something like that, 19, I can't remember the year. His name was Pop Smoke. And it seemed like, you know, a lot of times when I start hearing about the rappers, it's after they die. And then he got murdered by this young punk. Got murdered. And guess what? Well, one of the guys only did, because I guess he was on the age, 17 or something like that, so he only did like 3 years in jail. 3 damn years. I got out. I wonder how Pop Smoke mama feel about that. You know what I mean? Getting all the dagger in jail so quick. Where's the justice in that? There's no justice in that. I believe 16, 17, those people should spend a lot. Murder somebody, you should spend the rest of your life in damn jail. Point blank. You know what I mean? You walk freely. This person is not here no more? No, man. It ain't right. It's not right at all. Where is the injustice, huh? Let's talk about another story. Shadrach Minkins, right? So Shadrach, and you know this story right here? Yeah. It's a really good, inspiring story, though, man. I like this one. I like the story right here. So Shadrach Minkins was born into slavery in 1814 in Virginia. But he didn't stay there. He escaped north to Boston in 1850, just before the Fugitive Slave Act made it legal to arrest escaped slaves, even in free states. So, he was working at a coffee house when U.S. Marshals grabbed him. word spread fast. A multiracial group of abolitionists, black and white, stormed the courthouse and freed him. They got him into hiding and eventually smuggled him into Canada. Think about it, right? Even back then, right? They do have a lot of good white people out there. I must say this, they do, okay? Because even back then, these white folks out there know that slavery is not right, right? They knew that, and they helped this man escape all the way to Canada. Think about that, though, man. I really believe, you know what I'm saying, that was a blessing for him. You know, they say, you know what, though? I'm going to storm this thing. I'm going to get him out here. We're going to put him in the in the little carriage, whatever they had back in then. And hold on, we're going to ride our horse to whatever until we get him to freedom in the Canada. So when he was in Canada, he rebuilt his life. He even opened a barber shop and started a family. He died a free man. His story became a rallying cry against the injustice of the Fugitive Slave Act. Man, you know what? I wish Hollywood could know about the story and do like a TV movie or something about this daggone story. I think stories like this need to be told, right? I really believe so, because this is a great story. This man was born into slavery. He's like, you know what, I'm tired of being a slave. I'm tired of these white folks telling me what to do. You know what I mean? Picking cottons and all the crap. I'm tired of it. You know, he was in Virginia, and Virginia gets cold. Imagine you're a damn slave outside all day in the freezing cold during the winter time. Imagine that. Think about that, man. A lot of us don't think about it because we were born free, right? But think about back in those days, you know, places like Virginia, Maryland, whatever, where they had slavery at. And during the wintertime, you got to be outside picking cottons or whatever they did back then. Huh? Be outside all day. And then in the summertime, when it's blazing hot, you're outside all day doing that. Probably not even drinking water. Probably getting dehydrated. Thirsty as heck. You know? And I even wonder, let's go further. How often do they take breaks? Or do they just work all day long from sun up to sundown? Huh? Think about that, man. And this man said, you know what, though? I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. Forget that. I'm escaping, right? And he did. And he had the good people to help him out. So what would you do, right? Would you risk everything to save someone you don't know? This story challenges us to think about when breaking the law is the right thing to do. So now, if God forbid something like that happened today, would you risk your life? Would you risk your freedom to really save somebody that you do not know? Tell me, what would you do as a person? You don't know this person, right? And you know what's going on. Just like what's going on right now with ICE. Let's talk about that. Right, grabbing up these daggone people, just grabbing them up. And they come with me now. And you have a chance to help this person, right? And you know this person. Just say you know him. You know the person, though. And you have a chance to help this person. Would you? Or even if you don't know the person, but you know what ICE is doing is wrong, right? What they're doing, they're assaulting this guy or the woman, and they're beating this person up. And there's a chance to help this person. Would you do it or not? That's the question. Would you help them out to risk your freedom to help out these people, knowing what's going on, what happened to them is wrong? Huh? Tell me. All right, so my next story is quite trailblazing. Born in 1795 in Vermont, Alexander, Twilight was of mixed African descent. Twilight was of mixed African descent. He worked on farms and didn't even start school until age 20. But by 1823, he became the first African American to earn a college degree in the United States. Ooh, this is another great story. Think about this, right? First black person in America to earn a degree. Happened in 1823. Whoa. Twilight became a teacher, right? A preacher and a principal. He even designed and built Athenian Hall, one of the earliest dormitories in New England. So rural, students could have a place to stay while getting educated. Dang. Think about it, right? These young kids could have a place while they're learning. They don't have to worry about, oh, damn. Look, New England is a cold state, especially in the wintertime. A place to stay warm. And you know what I'm saying? I guarantee those young people was getting fed. You know what I mean? Meals and stuff like that. Oh, man. So, and then in 1836, Twilight was elected to Vermont state legislator, making him the first black American elected to public office. He wasn't loud or radical. He used education and leadership to move the needle. Think about it, right? This man, Vermont Alexander. Alexander Twilight, right? Alexander Twilight. Think about that, though. This young man, this young person back then. He was an innovator. An innovator, first black to accomplish a lot. Right? I believe people like these, we need to really study, right? Because think about it, right? Every time we did a Black History Month, who are they always talking about? Always Martin Luther King. That's it. Or Rosa Parks. Every Black History Month. Can we change it up some? Can we talk about people like that a lot of us never heard of? You know what I mean? Like Alexander Twilight. Can we talk about that person? And Shadrach Minkins. Can we talk about that person? Isaac Woodard. Can we talk about that person? And Wilmington, and also the Wilmington massacre, right? Talk about what happened. Talk about, you know what I mean? Even before the massacre, how black people had a thriving community. Those type of things we need to discuss. We need to discuss, right? So Twilight's life shows that progress isn't always loud. Sometimes it's steady, brick by brick. He didn't get parades or headlines, but he laid the groundwork for what's to come here in the United States of America. The first black man to achieve gold. Think about the first black person to graduate from college. What the heck? I'm telling you, that right there, we need to shine the light on. These type of things we need to shine the light on. And I'll tell you right now, whenever I hear stories like this, I'm going to speak on it. I'm going to speak on it. Because I believe the masses need to know about these type of stories. Because if you don't know about the tragic past that happened in the past, right? If you don't know about those type of things, then history will repeat itself. I'll guarantee that. History will repeat itself. You know, as we know right now, all the daggone people in certain states are banning these books. Are banning books. And what? Man, what are we going to do about it, right? What can we do about it? We can't do much about it right now unless we as a community, black folks, we start taking up offices too. We start going back to see to what those black men did back then. We need to start taking up a lot of the offices, right? We need to start running for office. That's what we need to start doing. We need to start running for office. Okay? We need to start doing great things, you know what I mean, within our community. we need to really, really, really think about when something negative happens within our community, highlight this stuff, talk about it. Unite as one. Unite as one. Whenever we see injustice, it doesn't matter if there's a white police officer killing a black person, but if a black person killing another black person as well, anybody, period, anybody, period. We need to talk about those type of things. We don't need those type of people within our neighborhood. Because if you don't snitch on that person, the same person will probably murder you. So snitch on that person. All right? So before I actually go, I have a few minutes left. I'm going to talk about a couple books that I have written. All right? Colorblind, right? So Colorblind is a comedic and satirical take on gang rivalry and politics in L.A. The story follows Marcus Blood Jefferson and Christopher Cripp Lawson, two childhood friends who become rival gang leaders, but secretly maintain their friendship. As their rivalry escalates into a political campaign for mayor, they navigate absurd street dynamics, media satire, and community engagement. If you want to laugh, man, because sometimes, yeah, this is about the gang culture, but guess what, though? It's a funny book. It's not about all the violent stuff. It's just funny, you know, and if you want to laugh, this book should be for you right here. You can get the book, and you'll be cracking up, because it's funny. You know, because sometimes I think about it, right? Imagine if those gang members out there, these young gang members, say, you know, I'm tired of being a gang member. Let me do something better with my life. I'm going to run for mayor. I said, who knows? Why can't I lose by running for mayor, huh? You never know. That's why I write such stuff like this, these type of things. Because I don't want people to think. To think. You know what I mean? What could happen? A lot of my writing, whether it's fictional or not, it just make people think. Just like my next book, Make You Think, Before He Was Born. So Before He Was Born is a psychological thriller that follows a white pregnant woman haunted by dreams that her unborn son will grow up to become a serial killer. Known as the News Killer, the story spanned 30 years, tracing the boy's life from birth to his eventual capture, blending chilling visions with a tense police investigation. The twist, it was all a dream. Yeah, like Biggest Ball, it was all a dream. And now the mother must decide whether to go through the pregnancy. Think about it, right? What would you do if you had a dream like that as a woman? And you wake up and your dream seems so, so real. Would you have an abortion? Or would you choose love? Make you think about this type of things, right? So, The Colorblind, let's see, hold on, yeah. So Colorblind explores the irony of loyalty and rivalry, while Before He Was Born dives into the complexity of fear and motherhood. Both stories challenge perspectives and provoke thought while keeping readers engaged with unique storytelling. So I'm telling y'all, people, pick these books up on Amazon, because I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. If you're in the mood for a psychological thriller or just a great satire, these books are page turner. I'm telling you, the way my mind be thinking when I write, make you think of what's going on, make you think. Oh, I'll be like, oh yeah, okay. I'm telling you, I know people. I just want to just thank y'all so much. For really listening to my conversation today. I know today it has been kind of dark, but sometimes in conversation, sometimes you have to go dark to uncover certain things in life, right? So I'm telling you right now, you know what I mean? When there's things that happen in your neighborhood, I'm asking you people, please talk about it, okay? Please talk about it. Please engage in your community. Please let your people, your family and friends know when things are going bad within your neighborhood. Let's talk about it. Let's have it engage, okay? And with all that being said, my people, I thank you so much for tuning into Common Ground. Until next time, keep the conversation going.
You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.